Hello, everybody, and thanks for tuning in to the Artists First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning into the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. This show airs every Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/MaxineThompson.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle @artist_first. And now here's your host of the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show, Dr. Maxine Thompson.
Good evening. Thank you for tuning in to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. I'm Dr. Maxine Thompson of MaxineThompsonBooks.com and MaxineThompson.com. I am the author of novel The Ebony Tree, award-winning novel Hostage of Lies, short story collection A Place Called Home, latest novel L.A. Blues, and upcoming novel L.A. Blues 2, Slipping into Darkness. You can also find my e-books, A Place Called Home, Saturday Morning, Never Knew Love Like This Before, All in the Family, on Amazon.com, and I'm also in the collection Proverbs for the People. All books are available nationwide or at my website, MaxineThompsonBooks.com. I also have some nonfiction books, The Hush Hush Secrets of Writing Fiction That Sells and The Hush Hush Secrets of Making Money as a Writer. Tonight's guest is a special guest. She's not exactly a new writer, but her book will be debuting with Simon & Schuster, Stray Boar Books, in April, I believe it is, of 2012. Her name is Entice, and she also has two self-published titles. Entice, please tell the audience about yourself and about that fabulous pen name.
Hi, Dr. Thompson, and I just want to first thank you for having me on your show. I've been wanting to, you know, be on your show as a guest for quite some time now, so I thank you for the opportunity.
Welcome.
My pen name, Entice, is it's a very unique pen name that I decided to come up with. One, because I wanted something that was definitely enticing, and I wanted something that was sexy, erotic, but I also wanted to be able to build a brand off of that name. So I incorporated Never Tell Your Secret. So Entice is basically the acronym, and it's spelled N-T-Y-S-E. And, yes, it stands for Never Tell Your Secrets. And just the mystery alone behind the actual meaning of the name, it always intrigues people, and it actually opens up a dialogue, you know. And I like that because it actually gives me like an excuse to hold back certain things, but at the same time sort of toy with them, therefore enticing them. So, and that you know, hence the name itself. So I like that. It's fun and it's unique and definitely enticing, and I always feel that I have like the upper hand, and they feel like I'm withholding something, and they just constantly want more and more, you know, and they feel like I'm dropping secrets in my writing, and I could be.
Okay, well, spell out Entice, is the capital N, right?
It's capital N, apostrophe, capital T-Y-S-E. Never Tell Your Secrets.
Okay, I forgot that's what the acronym stood for. That's
yes,
interesting.
Ma'am.
Well, you must tell them about your self-published books, because I would tell you they were a little bit too, I'm sure you have quite an audience for those books, but they were a little bit too something for me. I don't know. They may be a little too risky.
Too raw.
too gritty. But please explain it, and if you like, you can talk a little bit about your documentary that's kind of based around your book.
Okay, yes. My first self-published novel is My Secret Sure Lies, and the sequel to that one is The Princess Notoria's Vendettas. And basically, My Secret Sure Lies is about a lesbian couple, and I take them through some very realistic situations. And the cover concept itself, I wanted people to go in the book without judging my characters. That's why the cover has the look that it has to it. And as they start, and as the readers start reading the book, they seem to either find themselves drawn to the characters, only to discover that they are in a lesbian relationship because it's not revealed right away. At the time I had so many friends around me that were either gay or bi-curious or whatever the case may be. And not only that, I saw that there wasn't a lot of reading material in like the urban fiction genre that featured lesbians. So I wanted to do something a little different when I decided to make my debut into the literary world. And I chose to write on a topic that was taboo, somewhat kind of, you know, not the dinner table type talk. And I definitely wanted people to be, you know, just kind of intrigued by the different writing styles that I have, and to know that I'm very open with the type of genres that I write in. Like, I'm not limiting myself to what I write. So that's pretty much how the foundation got built before My Secret Sure Lies. And then, of course, I left a cliffhanger at the ending of it, which forced me to do, you know, the sequel that I had in mind. And that one is on the lines of, it's talking about female pimps. So I cover a lot on that. And then the documentary is basically in progress right now. We'll start filming the last week of this month, so I'm very, very amped up about that.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Put your cover on Black Expressions for My Secrets, Your Lies. Did they put the cover on Black Expressions for that one?
Yes. My Secret Show Lies is now available in Black Expressions. And here lately, within the last week, it made the top 20 bestsellers list. So
sometimes you have to, they have it in my writer's magazine, the Writer's Digest, uh-huh. They say make your writing stand out. And one of the points is forget about being pretty, meaning not pretty has two meanings here. Topics that are not attractive, like racism or incest, and B, by the way you write. And C, you're writing erotica. So that was for me a little raw. Come from the old school where
right. You
had 20 kids, but no one discussed sex. So I still have a hard time even writing my own sex scenes without a lot of symbolism.
Right.
But I love how nervy and gritty and how honest and just out there and truthful the young writers are with sex. They don't leave any stone unturned.
Nothing left to the imagination, right?
Right. But, you know, it's things I didn't know about. So I say I'm an old woman. I didn't know people did this. But
your
book is good that you're taking, because at first I said, well, she must be. And then I found out you were married and having your baby last year. I was like, okay, so that means you really took a stretch of the imagination.
I did. I stepped out of the box. And like I said, I also, with me knowing that I was going to, you know, go the independently publishing route, I had to also look at it from a business perspective. And my goal was to try to create something that I didn't see that was already, you know, just out there on the shelf. So I took a trip to Borders. You know, I did my research. I went shelf by shelf, and I said, okay, there's a lot of this, there's a lot of this. Okay, but I don't see much of this, you know. So there was lesbian erotica out there, don't get me wrong, but none of it was close as to what I had in mind in writing. So I wanted to fuse the two. I wanted to fuse urban and lesbianism together and create this, you know, explosive project. And at the same time, I wanted to uncover a lot of things in each of the women that I wrote about. And then that was their sexuality and discovering themselves and coming out and social acceptance. So I take them through realistic situations, and like I said, you never really discover that they're gay until you get like almost, you know, a few chapters into the book, because I wanted the reader to become attached to the character, fall in love with the character, opposed to going in and being judgmental. you know. So when they once they start reading the book, they were like, oh wow, I didn't know they were, you know. You know, and I mean, unless they read the back of the cover, but I have some people that have said, I had no idea that sin was a stud until I got, like, through the middle of the book. So that...
Explain what a stud is, and explain what the farm is. So.
Okay. A stud would be, in typical terms, it would be the woman who dresses tomboyish, so she would take on the persona of a male and play that more dominant role in the lesbian relationship. And the femme would be the more submissive one who would play the, you know, just the wifey role.
Okay. And in your documentary and in the response of the readers, what have been their feedback?
The reception for, the reception has been great for both projects. Mainly My Secret Sure Lies, which is really where this whole idea to do the documentary, this is where it stemmed from. That, my first book really inspired me to do the documentary, Beneath My Skin. Just the response that I got back from that project alone and the stories I heard and the emails that I received, it was so touching because I could be at a book signing and I would have literally, you know, people walking up to me and that would buy the book or have read the book and they would say, oh, my God, Entice, like, that was me in your book. Like, that was Sand, that Sand was me and or I'm Renee, you know. So they would basically telling me that I told their story. I touch on so much in the book. It's heartbreaking, and I take my readers through all of the pain that these characters had to go through, and just drawn off of what, you know, the responses I received from that, I felt like I wasn't complete with this project, and so I decided to do the documentary, and the documentary is basically going to involve stud and femme. Relationship couples that are in stud and femme type relationships or that identify themselves as a stud and femme. So I'm taking all these different interviewees and case study participants and we're doing this documentary and we're allowing them to tell their stories and it's phenomenal so far. It's great.
I know that it's hidden society within society, and I like books that take me into a world that I don't know about, or I mean, I feel like what I'm doing for LA Blues, I'm writing about a, you know, I've read a few articles about girl gangs, but how about when it's second and third generations of girl gangs? So I'm finding that that world is very different, and it's and I'm seeing more movies. I think, like, one was Columbiana, and I think Angela Jolie was in one, where you're seeing women that know martial arts and that mm-hmm. are just out there. And I like that aspect of your book.
Yeah, you know, you want to step out of your zone and step into someone else's zone and just, I mean, take them on a journey. And that's what I try to do in every book that I write. My writing... preference is that I like to write about, my subjects tend to be taboo anyway, so me doing this documentary is just right up my alley.
Well, that's really great. I know you were planning to do it, and then you ended up on bed rest with your pregnancy, so I'm so glad that your baby is here. How is she doing?
She's great, just turned 6 months, and I'm just like, wow, I'm loving and enjoying life right now. Because I'm a stay-at-home mom, and this has really afforded me the opportunity to work on a lot of my writing projects and really to get moving with the documentary because, you know, as you know, I've been really wanting to do this for a few years now. I never had the time. My profession is banking, so I've been a banker for over 10 years. And then, you know, so I feel like I was trapped in corporate America. I was limited to what I could do. I was limited to how many titles I could put out in a year, how many projects I could juggle at once, you know, and aside from me being married and now a mother, and me being home now, I'm able to do as much as I can, you know, can handle, you know, without just going overboard, you know, or stressing out about it. Like, I really am free to do a lot, and corporate America was not allowing me to do that. So it's by choice that I'm still home and able to, you know, take care of my baby and just enjoy, you know, this first year of motherhood. And at the same time, you know, my first year as an independent, you know, artist and working on these different projects and entrepreneur, all of that, I'm just loving this right now.
Great. Are you taking in work that is helping support? I always call my novels and my fiction is my fun, it's my dessert, it's my fun work, but I do editing, ghostwriting, agenting. Those are the things that are my 9-to-5, but they're all related to writing, so it's still something I love. Are you finding that you're able to do what you love and still make money with some of your writing projects that you do for others? Or?
Oh, yeah. Right now, while I'm doing the documentary, that's one thing. I'm also working on a couple of anthologies, and I'm accepting submissions. So I'm reading manuscripts, you know, at my leisure, you know, manuscripts that I'm considering publishing under my publishing company, A Million Thoughts Publishing. Let's see, I'm also in school. I'm pursuing my bachelor's. So the creative writing class and my screenwriting class, they seem to be the ones, the two that have taken up a lot of my, I guess, my 9-to-5 time, because those are very important. I'm in the process of trying to really hone my craft, so I'm learning a lot, and those are really kind of like the outlets away from me actually getting, like, my fiction writing, my fun writing in. So those are the more, you know, those are the more times where I have to actually focus and sit and, you know, complete things at a specific time, you know.
Good. And you know what? That's good, because it is a craft to be a good fiction writer. It's much harder. I've had screenwriters come to me, and their writing is still a little flat, because you don't, when you're writing a movie or a screenplay, from what I'm seeing, if it's only 120 pages, a novel, average novel, is going to be 200 to 400, you know, pages or 500. So you don't have time to show the emotion. The actor brings all the emotion, and they go do the character study and act out, and, you know, but it's not the same as fiction. In fiction, you can tell emotion, background, setting, so many things that you can layer your plot with that you can't do in a movie. But you, so to me, it's so intense when you write a screenplay, but it's still harder for a script writer to turn over and write fiction. I've seen some of their efforts, and it really, but it can be learned, and I'm glad you're taking classes and trying to learn. So let's talk about your new book, too. That's coming out in, is it April or May?
April 24th, to be exact. I am counting down. I'm so excited about it.
Yes, Twisted Seduction. Let's talk about that book. And do you have a giveaway? You said, even though it might have to be in a month, but at least the person who emails in can possibly get the book when it comes.
Yes, absolutely. The first two people to email in tonight, we can do a giveaway for Twisted Seduction. It releases April 24th. I'm hoping to have the advanced copies maybe the week prior, and I'll definitely get the book out to them if they, you know, just send us their contact information. Absolutely.
Well, give a synopsis of, a brief synopsis of Twisted Seduction.
Okay. Twisted Seduction is about two best friends who are they're trying to find the man of their dreams, and they found the man of their dreams, but they seem to be off limits. So they go through these, they take some desperate situations and turn them into the most exhilarating experiences that one could ever go through, and they try to find, they really try to get this, these men to settle with them. You have one who's has the perfect man, but she's still unhappy. She still feels incomplete. And then you have the other who happens to be in love with her husband's best friend. So it's twist after twist after twist in this book. And it was quite fun writing the book because, again, this is another one of those taboo topics. And I leave the readers with, would you allow your best friend to have an affair with your husband?
Interesting. Quite a premise. Well, I'd like you to read an excerpt and set it up for the listeners.
Okay. All right. This is an excerpt from Twisted Seduction, and again, it releases April 24th. Denise walked around Platinum Crest Investments in a more pissed-off mood than ever. She didn't even speak to Tanya, and when her intern called out her name, she ignored him. She walked straight into her office and closed the door. She powered on her computer and began searching through the files in her desk for Greg's portfolio. That son of a bitch, she huffed. When she got her hand on his file, she pulled it out and began going through it. She located the address that he had listed on his paperwork. She began typing it in the search engine just as she figured one of his hotel properties pulled up. She took another deep breath and called the number he had listed as his home number. It reached one of his properties. There was one last number listed in his paperwork. She went into the White Pages online directory and did a reverse lookup. Same thing, another number for one of his properties. She thought back to all the times she had suggested they go to his place. Instead of taking her to his house, they would end up at some fancy hotel for the night. For 3 years, Denise had been involved with a man who was living a double life. He had used her. He had lied. He had made a complete fool out of her and caused her to lose the best thing that had ever happened to her. She snatched her phone off the hook to call him, but Tanya came barging into her office before she could punch the first number. Mr. Adams is here to see you, and he says it's urgent. Denise placed the phone back on the receiver and got up from her chair. Send him in, she said. She closed her office blinds and turned on her satellite radio to drown out the conversation they would have in the next few minutes. The second Greg walked his ass in her office and closed the door behind him, she slapped him. Greg disregarded the stinging pain shooting through the entire left side of his face. I deserve that, he said. Denise's bottom lip trembled. How could you? I'm sorry, was all Greg could manage to say. He walked closer to her, apologizing profusely. Baby, I'm sorry. Sorry won't do, Denise said. I love you. I've given up so much for you. Greg kissed her forehead as tears began to stream down her face. I know, he said. We'll get through this. Denise wrapped her arms around his neck. He slipped off his jacket and tossed it on the arm of the chair by her desk. He placed his lips on her ears and kissed her passionately. His fingers moved through the roots of her hair as she moaned over and over. Her moans told him that just that quickly she had forgiven him and that all was okay. His hands then found their way to her ass. He lifted her skirt, picked her up, and placed her on the edge of her desk. Denise allowed Greg to have her way what he had spent for the past 3 years. She was vulnerable, and he knew it, but she wanted him more than anything in the world. They were just going through the motions. She propped her right leg up on the chair as his hands yanked off her panties and tossed them to the side. He then slid his dick inside of her. Denise didn't know what was happening as Greg took control of her body, her mind, and her soul. He was the devil in disguise. He had her doing things she never thought she'd do. I can't do this, she uttered, coming to her senses. He pushed his dick further inside of her. Stop. I can't do this. I'm almost there, baby, Greg said, stroking her so deep. Denise opened her eyes. She pushed him away. I'm not doing this, she said, getting down from the desk. Greg collected himself. He pulled his pants up and waited for his breathing to return to normal. Do what? He spat. I can't keep living a lie. I have a daughter to think about, she said finally. Greg chuckled to himself. He wiped the sweat from his brow. Whatever you say, he said. Tell your wife about me, Denise said. Tell her that you're in love with another woman and that you're leaving her. Greg looked at Denise like she had lost her mind. You can't be serious, he frowned at her. I mean, come on. Are you hearing yourself right now? Denise was shocked by his response. So wait, she sighed. I'm good enough to fuck but not to be committed to? Denise, nobody told you to fall in love. You know the rules. Rules? What rules? Greg raised his hands. Look, you're crazy if you think I'm telling my wife about you. I won't put her through this so you can get that idea out of your pretty little head. She looked at him with eyes that could kill. You don't have to, because I will. You don't want to play hardball with me, Greg warned. Trust me, my bite's much bigger than my bark. She has a right to know about me. Stay out of my marriage, Denise. Or what? Greg narrowed his eyes until they were slits. He put on his jacket, and before he walked out of her office, left her with something to think about. He looked around the spacious room. If you want to keep this nice little enterprise, then I suggest you stay in your lane, he smirked. Have a beautiful day.
Ooh. Oh, my goodness. Messy, messy, messy. And unfortunately, that is the source of most writing from Helen of Troy all the way back to time. I mean, since the beginning of time.
Mm-hmm.
There have been fights over a woman in triangles. Love triangles are the best type of plot technique or literary device you can use. Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
that
yeah.
is something else.
Oh, ooh. Yeah. Yeah. And this is more like an octagon.
No, because if she's married, she got a husband, a daughter, where he's married, I would.
Right.
What a web we weave.
Yes, yes, yes. So it's twist on top of twist. Ugh.
Goodness. It reminds me of a lady I met on the bus years ago. She was saying she was going to tell off her boyfriend who was married. She said, "I'm going to call his wife and tell him that he cheating on both of us." And then I heard a song shortly after where that was what it was about. The outside woman was calling the wife to say he cheating on both of us.
Right.
This is good.
My.
But, you know, and these stories have been told over and over, but mm-hmm. what makes them unique is that each writer brings their own perspective and their own DNA, their own fresh twist to it.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
Ooh, but you've sure given yours the fresh twist. Yeah, what a mess. What a mess.
Oh, yes.
Well, how do you come up with your storyline?
I don't really have, I can't say that I have a way that I come up with the storyline. What I do, though, is I take a situation and then I kind of capitalize off of the situation. So something small, you know, as of just maybe an argument that I might overhear or something I might observe may just inspire me to write the type of characters that I write. And then I just kind of start adding, you know, the drama into it and just weaving in, you know, different things in order to really try to provide like this provoking read. But I don't have a really set way that I do it. It's just kind of, something just will hit me at the spur of the moment. Even if I mean, it has even happened in my sleep where I'm like, oh my God, I have a story idea. And I'll just jump up out of my sleep and just go try to write it down on a post-it note. They call me post-it note queen because I'm always writing notes. And that's just pretty much how the stories kind of pop up. But no real way of, you know, sitting down and trying to figure out what to write about, because I think that's when I'll start feeling like I'm, I'll pressure myself to try to come up with something. So I'd rather just, you know, take a situation or a scenario and then just kind of, you know, make that situation, like, really big.
Well, you know, it's something I learned in L.A. Blues is that sometimes we don't write the story that we want to write. We write the story that we're called to write.
Exactly.
And that's the best story to write because it'll just take a hold of you and develop a critical mass until you just, it'll pour out and you'll take on personas and personalities of these characters. Because I don't know about you, but I hear how they talk and, you know, I get the different voices down and I talk like them. And I say, now, where did I learn that? I've never, it was a thing I wrote not too long ago where I was, it was a drug dealer. And he was, I ain't giving out another, you know what, a piece. But he said he wasn't giving out any free, you know what. And I said, now, where did I get that? Not in here. So,
and you don't talk like that.
Right. So you really have to become an actor when you're a writer.
Oh,
you
yeah.
act out your characters' voices. Well, in your case, you say you had different gay friends, what were some of the things that, did they say your story felt realistic, your secrets? Okay.
My secrets, your lies, they did. And that's pretty much how I was able to make it as authentic as I, you know, as I, you know, wanted it to come across to the reader. I wanted to really capture, like, maybe certain clubs, you know, certain arguments that come up, certain, just the overall relationship and how it's viewed and how they feel, like when they see someone looking, if they like see someone looking at them a certain way, just their real reactions to certain things. I really wanted to capture that. And with my main, with my, one of my main characters, with Sand, she's the stud. So I had to really like talk to a couple of my friends that are actually studs. And then I also had to kind of go to my husband for different pieces because I wanted to give her this male persona. And the only way I was able to do that was to go to the source, you know, and I had to really think like a man when I wrote her character.
Right. I was working on a book that a male wrote, and it's in first person for a female. And I told him, you could tell that a male wrote this. Number one, the women are not looking at the waitress's cleavage. You know, that's not a concern for us.
Right.
So you got to switch it up. Now, they might mock her and say, yeah, she, her clothes are too tight and that bra isn't fitting her right. She got a belly roll and a back roll. I mean, we might get catty like that. But the way you can see it was more like, oh, she just all juicy and she delivering it.
Yeah, but you can
bending
see
over,
from
a male.
Mm-hmm.
And when I would write with a male, one time I remember where I saw as a female, I would write too nice, you know, too intelligent. And the male would just, hey, pull his gun, I'll get ready to shoot somebody. You know? And I'm over there, well, baby, don't go. No, so I would tell him, man him up, because
right.
I'm going to give him the way we're going to sit and yip, yip, yip and talk.
Mm-hmm.
Men are not that much of a thinker like we are.
Right,
everything.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that's another thing. So if you're writing a male part and you're female, you really do need to talk to men, and if you
mm-hmm.
talk to them. So I'm sure it's the same in the type of book you did. Well, for this book, did you have, what was your inspiration for Twisted Seduction?
I just wanted to write about a woman. I wanted to really kind of go into the mindset of a woman who was married and had this, you know, had everything that a woman would could possibly want. You know, she had a good man. She had a beautiful home, great job. I wanted to paint this perfect picture for her, but I wanted her to still be unhappy, in a sense. And so that's where I decided to go in and make Denise, my main character, and paint her with all these beautiful things and, you know, all this money. She has wealthy clients. She's an investor for a living. And all these thriving things going for her, but yet still be incomplete, and then have a husband who's who waits on her nail and foot, and who's trying to be that provider for her, but yet she doesn't give him the credit that's due. So I wanted to take that type of relationship and just twist it up. So you would think that, okay, one is unhappy, so one would cheat. Well, I do it a little differently, and they both are cheating.
And, you know, when people have perfect lives or think that they have perfect lives, they're setting themselves up for a fall because life is messy. And, I mean, I really hate to say, the best books capture the messiness of life. It's just not in no little neat little package.
Mm-hmm,
good people die unexpectedly. Two of my in-laws that are, one is my age and one is about 10 years old, have fighting cancer. I mean, it's just, life is just filled with mess in there.
And unexpected twists and turns, like you said.
Right, the vicissitudes of life. And that's what our job as a writer is, to capture this and to show that you can overcome, and some people don't. But the truth of it is, you don't want them to overcome too soon because you could have a sequel if they don't.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you said, I know when we talked, you said you might be working on the second book, too. this one.
Yes, yes. So that'll be only for those listeners that are listening right now.
Don't give too much away, but that there's a sequel coming.
There is a sequel coming.
Well, what has been the reception for your first book, Liz? We talked about it a little bit, but touch on it a little bit more.
On the reception? The reception has been great. Actually, the book sales are still doing great. As I said, I just recently signed the deal with Black Expressions, and so now it's available in Black Expressions, and it just made the top 20 list. And so even there, you know, there's still a demand for this book. I still have people, you know, reach out to me and ask me about the first book. I have people who reached out to me, including friends, who have said, I need another book. And I'm like, what happened to your first copy? They say people steal their books because they'll start reading and they don't want to give them back. So I really believe that I wrote a really good book when I wrote My Secrets to Your Lies. And although it was totally different than anything that I'm writing right now or that I have in the plans of writing within the next year, it's still one of my top sellers, and I guess because it's so controversial, I get a lot of feedback on that one book. And that's what really inspired my documentary that I'm working on. So the documentary, even the interviewees and participants we have with this project, they're going back and reading the book and are like blown away by it. So it must have been a calling for me to write that. Like you said earlier, you know, I believe that the characters kind of held me hostage and wanted me to write their story. So I wrote that book, and then it made a lot of people question my sexuality because I wrote the book. It was so genuine, and it came from such a genuine place. They really thought I was, you know, in the life because of the realness to the book, you know?
That was what I thought, too. You know?
Mm-hmm. And I like that because that means I've done my job. You know, like, let's say if I wrote about a drag queen, and if somebody came to me and said, are you a drag queen? That, to me, would mean that I did my job, and I made that character so real, so believable, and people walked away really believing that, you know, and knowing it's a piece of fiction, but they still ask me to this day, are these based on real people, you know?
Good. Well, that's great, because sometimes, you know, it can be a sensitive subject, and particularly now that we have so much of the, where the kids are being bullied and killed and all like that, so you really were dealing with a very sensitive subject. Well, talk about your self-publishing experience. Did you try to get that book published before you self-published the first one?
Yes, I went to Kensington, and Hillary Sayers was the first editor at Kensington that looked at my book, and she loved it. She loved it from the moment she read it. And was waiting on for me to, you know, to complete the sequel before she could make a decision on whether or not she was going to be able to buy the first book. Mm-hmm. And so that book, I was like, oh, yes, it, you know, I have a deal. I was trying to speak that into existence, and I was ready for that deal. But unfortunately, I'm not sure what happened, but Hillary left the company. Mm-hmm. And so my book fell into the hands of someone else, another editor. And she wrote me to tell me that she had my book and that she was reviewing it. And mind you, it had already gone through that process. And you know how lengthy of a process that can be.
Very slow at Kensington.
That's a lengthy process. And I had already waited a whole year or two, and then to be told that, you know, well, I have to review it. I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. So, but I was still, you know, hopeful, and I still prayed about it or whatever. And unfortunately, that editor did not find it, you know, worthy of publishing with Kensington. So,
but you know, it's a risky book. And so when you're, that's why it's so great that people can do independent publishing now, because when you're taking a risk and you're stepping out there with something that people don't like to talk about.
Right, right. And And that's what really drove me to self-publishing it, because after that and after that wait, I just couldn't stomach it anymore. So, you know, I decided to continue with self-publishing, and I did that with my sequel as well. And both novels have done great. They've done, I mean, beautifully, and I don't regret it at all. I decided to invest in myself, and that's just what I did, because I knew that at the end of the day, I know how to sell my product. And although it was considered urban, it still had the alternative lifestyle tag to it, and that might have been where the other editor didn't really know how to market it. But I knew my audience, and I knew how to market my book. I mean, I was a banker by day, 10-plus years in banking, so I knew how to sell. I know how to sell. And that's one thing we learned.
I do that with the other book, too, because we've had a lot of issues where writers, they'll sit and write their book,
mm-hmm.
and then when they get a book deal, they won't really promote it. But see, by you being self-published, I'm sure you'll do well, because you've learned the business kind of from the bottom up. And I met you on Facebook. I think we met in October.
We did.
And you already had such a good platform and were selling your books. And you already had approached the thing. So
yes.
It was like a no-brainer. And I think you had your book deal offer in January.
No,
I think even in November, but we didn't see the contractor later.
Until January. We had the deal in like a month.
Right, and it was because, so I also believe in when things are for you, they just go right through. When things are for you, it's all this go wrong, so that means that's not for you. So I have no problem now with saying goodbye to clients if I can't get them something in a short time, because when it's for you, it's for you. All the gates just open. What's for you? I always say, what God got for you, he got for you, but you can't sit and expect somebody else to discover you. That day is over. You have to discover yourself and put yourself out there.
You got to take a chance on yourself.
Maxine?
Yes.
Actually, both of you guys. We have questions from some listeners.
Okay, go ahead. Give me all the questions now. Go ahead.
All right, I got two here to read. The first one is from Amy in Texas, and it says, with a new baby, and as she'll grow older, do you think you will tone down your raunchiness, and will you let her read your books as she grows older?
Amy, I can't say that I'll tone it down. Not today, as we do this interview. I can't say that I will, because that's that enticing side of me.
Right.
But I will never let her read my books. No way, Jose.
Right.
I don't even let my mom read my books. She has my books, but I tell my mom, I beg her, please don't read my books.
All right. Well, the next question here is from Rod in Oregon. And it says, while being in school and just having a newborn, how do you think this will affect your writing?
Good question. So far, I have not seen myself struggling with that part of it. I think it's about time management and the balance, and that's what I aim to do. I try to maintain a balance with my life, period. So I have certain times that I write. The most time I would write would be, I want to say, early morning hours when she's asleep, because that's when I know that I can write a full scene without, you know, any distractions or without having to stop and come back. So I try to write early morning, I mean wee hours of the morning. And then that way I can give her attention, you know, and then I do homework during nap time. So that's why I'm able to really get a lot of things done, is I just really manage my time. Like I said, I'm a post-it note queen, so I'm making notes and definitely still jotting down things along the way. So I'll be playing with her, and if something pops in my head, I make a note of it.
All right, cool. If there's any other questions, I'll be sure to let you know. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and for those emails, if you could email, forward them to me so that I could send them to Entice so she can send the books the review. So those are the first two people emailed in, and they'll get their review copy when Entice gets them.
Congratulations, you guys.
Yes, Amy and Rod. Okay, mm-hmm. I appreciate your emails. Okay, and I'd like you to talk about how you promote your novels, because you are the promotion queen. I looked at it. I see you have 59 reviews on Amazon for a self-published book. That is great.
Yeah, I don't limit myself when it comes to promoting, and I'll just be really honest with you. I promoted at clubs. I'll promote at a bowling alley. I'll promote anywhere and everywhere I can possibly promote. I tell people that I am my own walking billboard, and I'm constantly, constantly promoting my book and my brand. With online, it's kind of difficult being able to just kind of stay on top of all the social networking sites, so I just hired a publicist to assist me in that area of it. But I purchase ads that I believe are going to benefit my project. And when I say that, I sit down and I look at, I have someone that I know that will pull analytics for me. So I sit and I look at the sites, I can go by the counter on their site, but I never go by the counter on their site. I always have someone pull analytics for me, and then I can really see what the drive is and what the traffic's like on their site. And then I promote on those sites. Another thing that I do is in the groups on Facebook, those have been really beneficial because I don't know how I get in those groups. I think people just add me to the groups. So I really use that to my advantage, and I promote within those groups because most of them are, book affiliated. So I'll go in and just let them know, hey, this book is coming, blah, 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 blah. And then I also find like a time that I can, like a time block. So I'll promote, like this morning I did it from probably about 5 to 7 o'clock. I set that time to just promote online. Right. I did ebook blast. Did a recent ad with AAMBC, so she sent out some different things for me. Did an ad on Urban Review. So I try to really target the sites where there are going to be a lot of literary, people who read or promoting literacy.
Great. And also I wanted to know, how did you feel when you signed with Strayborn and with Simon & Schuster?
I was elated.
Yes, I
was so excited. I actually cried when I heard that we got the deal. You delivered that news to me, and so it just meant that all my hard work finally paid off. It's so hard for a writer to be heard and for their work to be exposed, nationally. So when I learned that, we got the deal, I was just, oh my God, I just started thanking God, and then I was thanking Zane for even taking that chance on me and giving me that opportunity to, really just take this to another level.
You're bringing back some of the excitement that I remembered when I first was an agent of being happy when a writer, because there's just been so much here lately. Writers have just been... And it's been okay, because I've always believed that it's like a marriage, and when the marriage ends, maybe it's time to separate. Mm-hmm. But I've just seen writers be very ungrateful recently. Like they're disgusted with the sales, they're disgusted with the e-books. I mean, they're not disgusted with the e-books, and it's really. If you're a business person, I would recommend that you do your e-books, but a lot of people can't really push their e-books, and they're not going to do that well self-published because they're not, they're more writers. So it just depends on you, but a lot of writers, they have gotten kind of disgruntled, and so that kind of was making me take it personally because I've been in the line of attack. Now, when a writer mad at their publisher, they get mad at the agent. You know, like, well, you're the one that, I can't make people send money. I can't make them do. So I've been going through a lot of attacks, but, you know, I say I don't care. It, to me, it was like something my brother told me. Whenever there's a pig in the barnyard with an open sore, all the pigs would eat out of it. Well, you know, I had a broken leg. No one came at me when I was standing on 2 feet. It was like I got told off, I got this, that, and other. And it was, some didn't know I had a broken leg, but some knew. They didn't care. Yeah. So I said, okay, I might be down, but, baby, I'm going to be up on my feet one day. So
I know that's right.
I thank you for all that, for the ones who showed me, you know, how they really were, and I have no problem with it, and I'm glad. And, you know, and I don't mind if it was a case that I did the best I could and they saw that it was taking too long and they changed their mind. That part I don't mind. I didn't consider that attack, but I've been attacked. I'd say, what is this? Mm-hmm. And so to hear you, you're bringing back the joy of why I used to be an agent, because I was beginning to lose it, and I don't like a few people. I mean, I was even approached by a male who I have known for at least 12 years from different circles when we would be out promoting at cruises and at the BA and all. And somebody said he wanted to know if you. I said no. So hearing your excitement now, you're renewing my faith in that there is a purpose to be an agent. You know, it's not always about the money. It's about seeing talent get out there. We need more talent. We need new voices. They still want to keep bringing. I just saw the top 10 black writers. They still want to bring up writers that were writing back 40 years ago. We got time for new voices now.
Yes, indeed. And I definitely agree with that.
Happy that you're coming along, and I'd like you to give your website, the titles of your books, and then how the listeners can reach you before we end the interview.
My website is www.entice.com, and that's N-T-Y-S-E. And my titles are My Secrets, Your Lies, Stud Princess, Notorious Vendettas, and my latest that's releasing April 24th is Twisted Seduction. And my previous novels can be purchased on Amazon, on my website, wherever books are sold. And please, please go out and pre-order your copy of Twisted Seduction.
Okay. And one parting word, what words of advice would you give to other aspiring writers?
Just do it. Because if you put too much thought into it, if you try to figure out all the technical stuff and the stuff that you'll probably never, ever figure out until later in your literary career, then it'll discourage you from really just writing and getting out your story. So just focus on your story and then as you focus on your story, and once you get that story out, then start to hone your craft. Read, and I can't stress that enough, because that's when you'll actually get to take on and read different styles of writing, and then you'll figure out your own voice and what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And believe in yourself, you know, and if all else fails, and if you can't get that deal that you're hoping and wanting so bad, invest in yourself.
Okay, well, I think that's a great piece of advice, Entice, and, you know, just keep up the good work. I look forward to seeing you have plenty of books out there, because you've got the right attitude. You're doing the work. You're not. It'll be good if you get the accolades, which you did already, to have hit the top 20 in Black Expressions. That's no mean feat, and particularly for your self-published book. And so I just want to see how Twisted Seduction does. Did it get picked up by Black Expressions?
I believe so.
Okay, well, good. Congratulations.
Yes.
Good news for me and for you. That's
yes.
Money. That's what, you know, okay, I try not to look at the money as an agent, because, you know, if your writers aren't making a lot, then you can't make a lot. And there are big agents out here in California that are just mainly dealing with TV. I'm finding out that some, they were suing an actress because she didn't pay them their percent. And we were talking about $250,000. So, you know, it's a lot more to be in TV or to be in movies. But I was always a lover of books. So sometimes you have to do what you love. I like the feel of books. I've always loved the library. I have my own personal library now. And this is what just having this talk with you have kind of brought me full circle that this is what I would do if it wasn't for the money. So
exactly.
I can't really feel bad because it feels good to have African-American fiction and to have a variety of books. We don't just have to have literary books. I want some junk. I've read all types of fodder and junk and everything in every other race. So why shouldn't we? All our books don't have to be literary. Sometimes you can find literary right within mysteries and within erotica. It doesn't have to always be. It could just be a commercial book. But I'm just glad that we have a variety now that we can pick from, good, bad. Some are better than others, but at least we have a variety because I'm from the period of time where there were no black books. And when you tried to write, you had difficulty even describing the black sensibility because all your books that you read were white. All the TV shows were white.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a great time. You don't know you're making part of history, too, to write your books at this time.
Oh, yes, and I really enjoy it, and I'm just glad that, you know, we are in a different time and age where we are able to really get our works out there and be heard, and it just feels so good.
Right, and, you know, this isn't just happening for African-American writers. Now this is happening for everyone. It's like it's the Wild Wild West with these e-books. People are hitting the New York Times that have been self-published. People are hitting the USA Today bestsellers list and are making six figures self-published with 99 cent and $2.99 books on e-books. So this is a whole new day for writers.
If writers
really get serious, they can make money. They don't have to be a starving artist, and they can live their dream and be happy.
Exactly.
But okay, well, I will talk to you later, and congratulations on your new book, and I can't wait for Twisted Seduction to come out on April 24th. So the best of everything, Entice.
Thank you so much, and again, thank you for having me on your show. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, I did too, and we'll talk. And please return next week for the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. I'm going to have Dr. Richard W. Walker, Jr., M.D., and his title is African-American Healthy. See you next week. Love you all.